Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and go to Tehran, Iran, and speak with Ali Arouzi, who is the NBC bureau chief in Tehran and one of the few Western journalists operating in that country. We will discuss the arrival of UN inspectors in Iran and the brinksmanship over the increasingly severe sanctions that might lead Iran to cut off oil to its European customers who have joined the US in these sanctions. Then we'll get another perspective on the growing tensions between Iran and the West with Kelly Galnoush Niknijad, who is the editor-in-chief of Tehran Bureau, an independent source of news on Iran that is in partnership with PBS's Frontline. We'll discuss the recent report in the New York Times that Israeli war planners think a limited attack on Iran may not lead to the catastrophic consequences many are predicting. Then finally, we'll go to Cairo, Egypt, and speak with Sharif Geber, who is an independent blogger active with the group No Military Trials for Civilians. We'll discuss the standoff between the demonstrators in Tahrir Square and the ruling military regime that is reluctant to cede power and is holding the son of a cabinet secretary in the Obama White House, claiming foreign interference in an attempt to distract angry Egyptians from the regime's intransigence. Joining us now is Ali Arouzi, who is the NBC bureau chief in Tehran, in Iran. He's one of the few Western journalists operating in that country. He was born in Iran, and his family moved to London when the Islamic revolutionaries deposed the Shah. He first returned to his native country in 2004 to report on the massive Iranian earthquake and has since become one of NBC's chief correspondents on Iranian affairs. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ali Arouzi.
Hi, Ian.
And first of all, let's touch on the arrival of the UN nuclear inspectors in Iran. That clearly indicates some kind of break. Do you know what went on behind the scenes to facilitate their arrival?
Well, I mean, Iran has been under a lot of pressure recently. I mean, it's been more pressure than they've faced since the Iran-Iraq war. So they want to be seen to be more conciliatory, to be more transparent, and that's why they've allowed this senior delegation of IAEA inspectors in. Iran says that they have nothing to hide, but the purpose of this IAEA delegation is to determine whether Iran has a secret nuclear weapons program. Now, Iran maintains that its program is purely for civilian purposes, and they say that they're going to prove this on this trip. But Western powers and analysts remain very skeptical about Iran's motives, saying that, you know, allowing in these inspectors and trying to restart nuclear talks is all a stalling tactic that's been employed by Tehran time and time again. So, I mean, we have to see what the net result of their visit will be. I mean, it's still even unclear whether these inspectors are going to be allowed to visit nuclear facilities. They may just be confined to talks with Iranian officials. But I think we'll get a better read on that once they've left the country in 3 days' time.
And the European sanctions are now in place. I think it was New Year's Eve that President Obama signed the National Defense Authorization Act. He was reluctant to sign it because he felt that sanctions against Iran could be sufficiently severe to bring about a shock, an oil price rise, which would not be good for the president in an election year. Apparently, he was able to get some language that gave him a little wiggle room and a 6 month grace period to allow customers of Iranian oil to find other suppliers. Well, it does look as though, my understanding is that Iran may preempt what is happening with the Europeans who've just joined in the sanction regime. The customers of Iranian oil, Greece, I think, Italy and Spain, Iran may cut off the oil preemptively before they get the 6 months period to find other supplies. Is that something you're hearing?
Yes, I mean, we've actually got an in report today that Iran's oil minister, just about half an hour ago, released a statement saying that Iran would soon stop supplying oil to certain countries. They've definitely dug in on this issue there. As you said, they've preempted these sanctions move. What the U.S. and the European Union wanted to do was wean certain countries off Iranian oil and give them 6 months to do this. Now, if Iran stops selling oil to these European countries, as of, say, tomorrow, certain countries that are dependent on Iranian oil are going to be scrambling to find an alternative source, which could send oil prices sky high and really disrupt the market. And this is a fairly shrewd move from the Iranians. They're figuring, listen, if you guys are going to stop buying our oil in 6 months' time, well, we're going to make life very difficult for you today. As goes with the example for the Strait of Hormuz. I don't think Iran would just suddenly shut the Strait of Hormuz tomorrow, but if their oil supplies were disrupted to, say, Asia, China, and beyond, then they would disrupt the Strait of Hormuz because they're not getting anything out of it either. So there is a lot of saber-rattling, but behind that saber-rattling, there's some pragmatism by Iran. I don't think they're just going to pull a stunt without thinking about it, but if they feel the pressure, they're certainly going to make everybody else feel the pressure.
Well, clearly closing the Straits of Hormuz on the surface appears to be would be a self-inflicted wound. If they do preemptively cut off supplies to the European countries that have been used to the Iranian supplies and that have now joined in this new sanctions regime that the Europeans have adopted, isn't that likely to have an effect on the price of oil pretty much immediately, right?
It certainly would, but in the meantime, before those sanctions could be implemented, and if Iran stops selling oil to the European Union or certainly even temporarily disrupts the flow of oil through the Strait of Hormuz, yes, oil prices would go way up, but that would also benefit Iran because it's still selling its oil to Asia. So they would benefit greatly by, you know, a huge hike in oil prices. So they'd calculated that as well. So in this short-term period of 6 months before those sanctions are implemented, Iran could make a lot of money from oil revenues.
And this is the very thing that President Obama was trying to avoid and why he was threatening to sanction the National Defense Authorization Act in the first place.
That's right. But I mean, what he was trying to do is something that I don't think anybody else has tried to do. And it's a very difficult thing to do, is trying to freeze out OPEC's second largest oil exporter without a hike in oil prices. Now, that's a tall order for anybody to pull off.
Right. So what is the feeling in Iran? Is there a sense of war fever there? Because clearly the West and Iran are on a collision course. There were some recent maneuvers in the Straits of Hormuz with the Iranian Navy, threats against the U.S. Navy, the threats to close the Straits, another naval exercise is coming up in February. Apparently, the U.S. and the Israelis have cancelled a joint exercise that they were planning. Excuse me, but the general atmosphere is one of spilt gasoline and the likelihood of somebody is going to strike a match.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's a lot of tension here amongst the working people. They definitely feel the faint murmur of a war drum beating. We were up in the Strait of Hormuz last week. We did a piece that aired last Friday on the nightly news. We went up into the Strait and, you know, you could taste the tension there. People, the regular fishmongers and fishermen were worried about, the Fifth Fleet being right on their doorstep. So there is definitely a sense of anticipation here. People are worried. They saw a very long war. Most people that are of a certain age here saw the 8-year war with Iran and Iraq, and they don't want a repeat of that. And they've, heard some very fiery language from both sides. But, unfortunately, in these situations, it's the working man, it's the cab driver, the fisherman that pays, the unreasonable price for Iran's standoff with the West. And people are suffering right now. You can see that the bite of the sanctions taking effect through the country. The dollar has skyrocketed. Food produce has gone up. Price of gasoline is expensive. So things are very tough here right now.
Well, I suppose the theory behind the sanctions, Ali Arouzi, is that the tougher you make the sanctions for the Iranian people, the more pressure they put on their government, and then the government somehow will accede to the demands from the West. Is that logic likely to apply to the current situation?
Absolutely. I mean, from from one swathe of the population that would, but you know, Iran is a massive country with huge factions, and one of the effects, if you know, if the government plays its propaganda properly, one of the effects of that could be that it would galvanize support for the regime, because you know, as they keep saying, the enemy is at the gate. Be aware that we've been telling you that they want to hurt Iran, that they want to cripple the nuclear program, that they want to sanction us. So this may give some support to the government. It's very hard to tell as we go further. You know, that balance will even itself out. Also, the government here is very worried about parliamentary elections coming up on the 2nd of March, and these are going to be the first elections since the disputed elections of 2009. So there's all sorts of pressure and tension in Iran.
Well, I understand, though, again, I speak with Ali Arouzi, the NBC bureau chief in Tehran, Iran, who's one of the few Western journalists operating in Iran. And as he mentioned, he's been back from the Straits of Hormuz, where he's reporting for NBC's nightly news. And my understanding, though, is that the politics in the country are largely disputes between the two, you know, elements of the political right, if you will, the Speaker of the Parliament and the President, Ahmadinejad. The elections, are they likely to have any other representatives of the people that came out during the Green Revolution?
It's unlikely. I mean, you know, senior members of the more moderate side have all but asked people to boycott the elections. But you know, there's also a large swathe of people that will put their votes forward. But it's, you know, people are waiting to see what's going to happen. It's going to be a very, very tense time. We're not sure how many people are going to come out and vote, or if there's going to be tension. So, but. For all intents and purposes, the Green Movement has become somewhat irrelevant, and none of the people that were involved in that would be involved in these elections. It will be a battle between the hardliners.
And it seems that that Ahmadinejad is more and more isolated. Perhaps the Supreme Leader is kind of sorry that he supported him over those disputed elections, and. Is it likely that he'll be replaced?
I think that would cause far too much turmoil. They'd probably rather see him finish his term without too much noise. But you know, things in Iran are predictably unpredictable, and you never know what's going to happen from day to day. But I wouldn't entirely write off the president. You know, he's a pretty feisty guy, and he claims to have all sorts of files and things on all sorts of people. So it seems as though he has protected himself to a certain degree as well.
Well, Ali Arouzi, there was a very disturbing front page story in Friday's New York Times. Israelis assess threats by Iran as partly bluff, belief that an attack will not stir chaos. And essentially the article, which is quite a lengthy article, suggests, quoting a lot of Israeli war planners and strategic think tank specialists, etc., suggesting that if Israel were to attack Iran's nuclear facilities, there may not be a lot of casualties, and that a likely response from Hezbollah could be handled, if you will. And this seems to be suggesting a rather dangerous direction, because the deterrent, apparently, what my understanding is that the U.S. administration has been leaning on Israel not to attack and saying they want nothing to do with it because of the consequences being so dire, shutting off the Straits of Hormuz, etc. But now we're hearing, at least via this front page New York Times story, that people in Israel think that Iran is bluffing. What's your sense on the ground?
Well, it's difficult to say. I mean, Iran is they have a strong army. They don't have much of an air force, but they have a huge missiles program, and they're not somebody to be trampled on. You know, the Revolutionary Guard are a very proud force, and they've always claimed how strong they are. So, I think if they're cornered and they're put under pressure, they could do something unpredictable. you know, an attack on Iran's nuclear facilities would be taken extraordinarily seriously by the government here, and they wouldn't want to be seen taking it lying down. So, yeah, I mean, I think a retaliation could be on the cards. Another extreme danger also is that, you know, we've seen Iranian Navy speedboats come very close to U.S. carriers in the Persian Gulf, and if an overzealous Iranian Navy boat commander makes some small miscalculation, that could also escalate matters much further.
Well, when the official with the Iranian nuclear program was recently assassinated by a magnetic car bomb that was attached to his car, what was, I thought, unusual about that, Ali Arouzi, was that the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, went public and condemned the attack and said the U.S. had nothing to do with it and vehemently disapprove of such actions. The assumption is that it was the Israelis. What was apparently going on at the time also was that the State Department were meeting in Turkey with the speaker, Larijani, had showed up at this meeting where both sides are trying to sort of back away from the brink, if you will. And there are suspicions in the U.S. that Israel did this in order to scuttle the diplomatic track. But my point is that the response in Iran was not so much to blame Israel, but to blame the United States, in spite of the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, distancing herself from the act. So if that's the MO, if Iran does not want to blame Israel for what Israel does, if Israel were to attack, would they blame the United States?
Undoubtedly. They've said it time and time again that any attack by Israel, Iran would see America complicit in the attack as well, and that that American bases in the region or American interests in the region would be targeted by Iran if Israel was to attack. So there's no doubt about that. And Iran also went very heavy on the assassination of the nuclear scientist, saying that, you know, this bore all the hallmarks of the CIA in collusion with Mossad. So anything Israel does, Iran will see America complicit in it. And you know, the point is, we all know that on the off chance that Israel did attack Iran, whether America liked it or not, they'd be drawn into it and they'd have to finish off what Israel started, and Iran is fully aware of that.
But what is the reason, though, why, in the case of this recent assassination, why does not Iran go after Israel first? Why does it blame the U.S.? Is it because they don't want to?
They blame them both here. I mean, Israel was blamed, you know, very firmly as well by the government and media. They were both blamed for the attack. Iran squarely laid the blame on Israel and the United States.
But I was trying to determine whether or not public opinion would be inflamed if they were to blame Israel, and would that therefore put them in a situation where they'd have to do something about it? I mean, that's
well. Awful. I mean, they have blamed Israel in the past, and that, you know, they've threatened they'll only do something if Israel attacks Iran. Iran also said that, you know, I mean, again, this is part of the bluster, but, you know, senior intelligence officials here said that, you know, Iran would now considering targeting, you know, Israeli military and officials if this was to happen again. So Iran has put a warning out there to Israel, saying that they are going to consider their own covert missions as well.
Well, I thank you for joining us here. This is clearly, obviously people in the United States are not particularly concerned, except those that have a real interest in this subject matter. But I take it that people in Iran are feeling that things could get out of hand.
Certainly. There's definitely a worry here that things could get out of hand. And, you know, Iran has lived under pressure since, you know, the Islamic Revolution 32 years ago, under an immense amount of pressure. So, and they've seen things quickly escalate. So, yes, there's definitely a lot of tension in the country and worries about how the future is going to pan out.
Well, Ali Arouzi, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Ali Arouzi, who is the NBC bureau chief in Tehran, Iran, one of the few Western journalists operating in the country. He was born in Iran and his family moved to London when Islamic revolutionaries deposed the Shah. He first returned to his native country in 2004 to report on the massive Iranian earthquake and has since become one of NBC's chief correspondents on Iranian affairs. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back at getting a second opinion on this very important and dangerous subject. وسعت نام تو وسعت نام خورشید جلوه خاک تو قرمز و سبز و سپید این نوانم من نوان منم من ذره خاک وطنم من ذره خاک وطنم من هی